work on that, I would appreciate it. We are wrapping up a series today, and we've been talking about the difference between giving, which all of you do, and being generous, which actually very few people truly are. And all of you give. Everybody gives. Everybody in America understands the importance of giving. But what we often don't understand and what we miss is the idea of generosity. Most Americans know how to give. They know how to respond to a need, but they don't understand a life built around generosity, because generosity is more than just random acts of giving. People who are persuasive can talk us into giving, right? They can sell us about giving. You've probably been invited to fundraisers, and there's always, you know, if you have kids, there's the school is always collecting for something, and you see the sad pictures on TV, and everyone, you know, whether it's through guilt or inspiration or some other motivation or good feelings, everybody gives, right? But here's the difference. Generous people never have to be sold on giving. Generous people don't have to be inspired. Generous people don't have to be convinced. Generous people don't give according to guilt. Instead, generous people have a plan. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. Now, 2 weeks ago, we talked about the promise of generosity, which is that when you become generous, you will give more, you will save more, you will consume less. But Jesus makes an even better promise. Jesus says people who organize their lives around generosity, not people who just give randomly, but people who organize their lives around generosity are actually happier. And last week we talked about how most Americans continually worry about money. Am I going to have enough to retire? Am I going to have enough to buy a house? Am I going to be able to get married? We worry. And then we do the craziest thing. Despite our worry about money, we go out and spend everything we make, or sometimes even more than we make. And so then we end up in debt, and we don't have any margin, and then we really do have something to worry about. And we get on this crazy cycle that we talked about last week of worry about money leading us to spend more money. And I put the crazy cycle on the next chart here, leading us to get into more debt and have no margin, which leads to more worry. And around and around and around we go on this crazy cycle. But the truth is that most of us who worry about money do not actually have a money problem. What we do have is four other problems. We have a self-control problem. We have a contentment problem. We have a discipline problem. And then Jesus would say we have a fourth problem. We have a spiritual problem. Because if you're worried, it's because you have placed your trust in riches rather than in Him who richly provides. Fortunately, Jesus says there's a very different way to live, and it's the way of generosity. When you begin to view the world through a different lens, the lens of generosity, because generous people do not assume it's theirs to consume. And this is a shift in thinking that makes all the difference in the world. Generous people do not assume that it's theirs to consume. They have rejected the consumption assumption. Most people think, if it comes to me, it must be for me, right? Jesus taught, no. If it comes to you, it may not be for you. And if you assume that it is for you, then you will live your entire life acting like an owner or a consumer. And Jesus would say, you are better than that. I designed you for different than that. Because living as a consumer always leads to the same place. It always leads to discontentment. Because no matter how new and shiny it is today, there is a newer and shinier one there waiting for you tomorrow, right? So you're never satisfied. Now, to break the crazy cycle, you do it by not making more money, but by reordering and reprioritizing your finances. Because as we said last week, even if you got a huge pay raise tomorrow, it would not solve your money problems, because you would just do the same things with more money. So the key is you reprioritize and reorder your financial world around generosity rather than around consumption. And this is a very simple thing. It's really just taking the thing that is last on your list and moving it to the top of your list. So let me show you how that works. And to do that, we're going to go back to our definition of generosity that we talked about the last couple weeks. It's the premeditated, that means you have a plan. Calculated, that means you know the amount. Designated means that you know where it's going. Emancipation means you set it free, your personal financial assets. So let's start with premeditated. In order to be generous, you got to have a plan. Generosity requires a plan. And in fact, that is so critical. That is such a key here that we got to remember this. Okay, so let's all say this out loud together. Ready? Generosity requires a plan. Now, I know some of you say, well, you know, I'm just not a planner. Now, my wife's a planner. She drives me crazy with her plan. Or my husband is always trying to show me his plan, but I'm just not a planner. Okay, for all of you non-planners out there, guess what? You have a plan. You just don't know it. But I know you have a plan because you have financial habits. And if you have financial habits, you have a plan. You've just never written it down. But if somebody followed you around today and watched everything you spend and how you use your money and just wrote it all down and put it in order, they could show you exactly what your plan is. Now, you might say, well, that's just what I do. Exactly. Because you are doing your plan, whether you realize it or not. Everybody has a plan. Now, I hate to say this because I love you, but most of you have a bad plan. Okay? And if you don't know what your plan is, then almost certainly you have a bad plan. Because when in life do you just drift into doing what's best? Never. Never. You naturally drift towards doing what's bad, but you have to plan toward what's good. And so even if you don't have a plan, you have financial habits, and those financial habits are your plan. So you are working a plan, you just haven't written it down. Now, if you don't know what your plan is, then I can tell you what your plan is. If you're someone who lives with the assumption that it's all for your consumption, then here's your plan. Consume it, save what I can, and give what's left over. That's your plan. Consume pretty much everything that comes your way, save if you can, and give what's left over. And that makes you what I call a 3S giver, spontaneous, sporadic, and sparing. If somebody guilts me enough, or I'm inspired, or I go to a fundraiser, then I'll write a check, but it's not planned in advance, so it's spontaneous. And it's sporadic because, you know, it's kind of here and there and hit and miss, and it's sparing. Boy, I really wish I could give more, I really wish I could do more, but I just can't afford to. And the reason is because you don't have a plan. But generous people have a plan, and they know what their plan is. And so if you're going to be generous, you got to come up with a plan, and then you need to work the plan. So that's the premeditated part. The second word in that definition is calculated. Calculated means you need to decide ahead of time, what percentage am I going to give? Deciding on a percentage is better than deciding on an amount, because then when your income changes, the amount automatically adjusts. Let me tell you why that's important. If you make $100 a month, like I did when I was in high school working in a restaurant, then, you know, if you give $10 a month, that's not a huge deal. I mean, what can you do with 10 bucks? That's like lunch money, right? If you make $1,000 a month and you give $100, well, that's still not a huge deal. But as the zeros start to increase and go up, then all of a sudden, the little voice in your head starts talking to you, and the enemy starts talking to you and saying, you know, if you make $10,000 a month and you're giving $1,000, that little voice is starting to say, wow, think about what you could do with that. That you could make a really nice car payment with that amount. That's almost a mortgage. Think about how many shoes you could buy with that amount. And this voice is in your head. And so if you try to decide on an amount to give, you will never go that high, and you will never be generous. And so the way to become generous and to overcome that little voice is you just choose your percentage. And then no matter what happens with your income, you just stick with it. The amount that Kathy and I give right now on a monthly basis is more than my total income when I first became an ensign in the Navy. And if back then, you know, I had imagined giving as much as we do now, it would have been out of my comprehension. And yet we just chose our percentage and stuck with it. And so it's easy. You see, generous people want to give more. And as their income goes up, they decide to give more. And the best way to do that is simply picking a percentage. It's not spontaneous, not sporadic, and not sparing. Percentage is best. And here's what generous people do. Here's what I'm going to challenge you to do. Generous people give it before they consume it. You see, the key to generosity isn't just giving more, and it's not just having a plan. The key to generosity is reordering or reprioritizing your finances so that what used to be last is now first. You give first, and you save second, and you live on the rest. You just flip the whole thing upside down. Instead of a 3S giver, spontaneous sparing and sporadic, you become a 3P giver. What do I mean by a 3P giver? You're giving a percentage, which you choose beforehand, and it's a priority, which means that you give it first, not last. So the minute you get your paycheck or your bonus or tips or whatever, you give your percentage first as your first priority. And then the third P is progressive. What do I mean by that? Most of you have heard that the Bible teaches giving or tithing 10% as the standard. But some of you have never tried that. And the whole idea of 10% for you is scary. It's like, no way could I afford that much. You know, I want to be generous, but no way can I just jump in with 10%. Well, progressive means that you start somewhere. Maybe you choose 3% to start with, or maybe you start with 5%, or maybe with 7%. You know, 3, 5, and 7 are all good Bible, you know, numbers, so, you know, maybe you choose one of those. Of course, 40 is a good Bible number, too. But I'm joking. So maybe you start with 3 or 7, and then over time, you bump up your percentage. So God blesses your finances, and you get a raise, and you decide, you know, I'm going to go from 3 to 5, or I'm going to go from 7 to 8, and progressively, you become more generous. But the key is you become generous by choosing a percentage and giving it first. You put it at the top of your list rather than the bottom, and then over time, you increase it. Okay, so now your generosity is premeditated. You got yourself a plan. It's calculated, so you've got a percentage. And the third part of our generous definition is it's designated. That means you choose ahead of time where it's going. You choose ahead of time. You see, the main reason some of you don't like to give is because people are always asking you for money, asking you for money, asking you for money, and you get tired of it and you don't want to deal with it, right? But generous people don't feel guilty saying no. Because generous people have already decided. They already know where it's going. Now, maybe you ask, well, how do you decide? How do you know where it should go? Well, that one's easy because Jesus told us. He said, where your treasure is, you've all heard this, Matthew 6:20, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is so cool. This is one of the brilliant insights that Jesus gave us. He told us that where your treasure is, your heart is, which means that wherever you're sending your money, a little bit of your heart goes there. And that means that if you want to change where your heart is, then you can change where you're sending your money. And that, it, because it works both ways. So when you're figuring out the designated part of your generosity, you simply think about, where do I want my heart to go? What direction do I want my heart to, you know, my affections and my desires, where do I want that to go? And if I want to love God more, then I ask God, where do you want me to send it? What, you know, what's most important to you? And that is how you connect your money and your heart. You pre-decide. You pre-decide where you're going to give. And then after that, when everybody else asks you for money, as they are going to be doing for the rest of your life, you can feel good about saying no because you're generous. You've already decided you're giving to the places you want your heart to go. You've premeditated and calculated it. You've already designated it. So you don't have to feel a bit guilty about telling somebody else no. I have to tell you, I get so many requests for money. And some of the places I get requests from, I really like the schools that I went to. I get so many requests from the Naval Academy and from Wharton and from the Regent University. They're constantly sending me stuff, and I have yet to give to any of them. And I don't feel a bit guilty about it either, because I am giving everything I can to the places where I want my heart to go. And unfortunately for the Naval Academy and Wharton, it ain't there. Okay? Now, you can still do random acts of giving, and I do all the time. But even when I respond to those special requests, I'm focused on donations that will somehow lead more people to Jesus. Because that's where I want my heart to go, is to things that will glorify Jesus. But what makes you generous is that you have pre-decided. You have a plan. You picked a percentage, you're giving it first, and you've decided ahead of time where you're going to give it. I heard a guy say it this way: saving is how you say yes to you and your future, but generosity is how you say yes to what is important to you. Saving is how you say yes to you and your future. Generosity is how you say yes to what is important to you. And you know what? You've all been in the situation where you become aware of something that really captures your heart and you think, oh, I wish I could give. If only I could give to that. And the reason you can't give, the reason you can't do more is because you didn't plan to do more. It's not really a money problem at all. It's a discipline problem. It's a self-control problem and a debt problem. But I know that many of you are going to become generous people, and so we're going to solve all that as you develop a plan to premeditate, calculate, and designate your giving. And again, generous people never feel guilty about saying no because they've already said yes. Generous people never say, you know, feel guilty about saying, no, I'm not going to come to your fundraiser, or no, I'm not going to be part of that campaign. Not because I'm not generous, but because I am generous. I'm so generous that I have already said yes. I've already got my generous plan. I've already picked a generous percentage. I've actually prioritized it number one, so I give first, not last. And I've carefully chosen where it's going because it's going where I want my heart to go. Let's look at something the Apostle Paul said about this, because Paul wrote a letter to the church in Corinth. Corinth is in Greece. And he gave instructions on how to deal with the whole money collection thing. 1 Corinthians 16, it says, "Now about the collection for the Lord's people, do what I told the Galatian churches to do." So Paul is writing this church in Corinth, and he says, look, I'm telling basically everybody to do the same thing. You know, I told the churches in Galatia to do this. You know, the same with the churches in Rome and Ephesus, etc. So here's how the churches should handle this whole money thing. He says, on the first day of every week, which is Sunday, on the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money. In other words, you've got to have a plan. Well, Paul, I don't know. I'm not very good at planning. Can't I just, you know, see how the Spirit leads? No, you got a plan. Well, can't I just wait and see how good worship is and see if I feel inspired to give? No. You need to premeditate a plan. Now, of course, our question is, well, how much? How much should I give? And Paul says, set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income. Well, but how much? In keeping with your income. In keeping with your income means that as your income goes up, your giving goes up. He's talking about a percentage. And he goes on, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. So here's what he's saying. When I get there, when I show up, there won't be any money pressure because you'll have already collected the money. And so the guy that's taking up the offering in the church service, he won't have to talk for half an hour trying to persuade and inspire and guilt everybody into digging deep. And he's not going to bribe people by saying, well, you know, if you give God $10 today, you'll get $100 next week. He won't have to show sad slides of the suffering people in Jerusalem because you'll have already set aside that money. And in the same way, you're not going to give leftovers, because you'll have been saving it up over time, and every single week you're taking the first part and setting aside because you have a plan, and it's your first priority.
So nobody's going to be in church that day saying, oh, you know, I wish I could do more. No, because you already have a plan and you'll have already put it into place. It's a premeditated, calculated, designated approach to giving, because that's what generous people do. And they don't have to be asked. They don't have to be begged. They don't have to be shown pictures. They have pre-decided. So what is Paul really telling these Corinthians? He's saying to them, you need a plan, so here's your plan. Here it is. Do this every Sunday. That's your plan. All of us here today also need a plan. And in fact, you've already got one, even though you probably don't realize it, but it's probably a bad plan. And so why not come up with a good plan? And you do that by making it your first priority, by picking a percentage, and then deciding where to give it so that your heart will go in that direction. And that's what generosity is. The premeditated, calculated, designated emancipation of personal financial assets. Now, if you want a really easy summary of all of this, there's an easy way to remember it. You probably heard me say this 100 times, but it's give, save, live. You give first, save second, and live on the rest. You give first, you save second, and consume all the rest. And some people make this more specific. They call it a 10-10-80 rule. You give 10, you save 10, you live on 80%. But if you're not willing to give 10% to start with, pick another percentage and start there. Because when you do, everything changes. I have people come to me so often and say, you know, Ken, I learned this a year ago, or I learned this 5 years ago, or I learned this 10 years ago, and it has made such a huge difference in my life. Because here's what happens. Generous people, not people who just randomly give, but generous people are wiser at making financial decisions. And they're wiser at saying no to bad decisions because they don't think and live like consumers. They live in what I like to call the new crazy. And we already talked about the old crazy, being on the crazy cycle. The new crazy is where you give and you save and you live on the rest, and it results in so much peace and so little financial stress. But people around you look at you and say, you're crazy. You give before you consume. You give before you save. You give first. That's crazy. Of course it's crazy. It's the new crazy. It's the crazy about God that leads to peace and happiness. I mean, you've already tried the old crazy. You've already been on the crazy cycle, and that just leads to worry and discontent. Let me tell you, the new crazy is so much better. Now, we are almost done today, and this is the last message of this series. And so I'm going to finish with a story about me and Kathy. And I have to tell you, I really debated about telling this story because I don't want to sound like I'm bragging. And if I do sound at any point like I'm bragging, I apologize in advance. But, you know, what I'm trying to do is brag about God. And, you know, sometimes when God really blesses you and does great things for you, it can almost sound like you're bragging. But this is all about what God has done and how good he is, okay? So I'm telling you that up front. And this story is kind of the story of my whole financial life. When I was in college at the Naval Academy, I went to a great church. And they taught me about generosity. And they taught me what it really looks like. And so I made my plan. And I picked my percentage, and I started tithing 10% of every check. The first thing after I got paid, that was the first check I would write. And God blessed my finances. In fact, after I got out of college and into the Navy, pretty soon I realized I was getting blessed so much that I wanted to give more. And so I raised it up to 15% and then 20% for several years. And I purposely lived a more moderate lifestyle than I had to because I loved giving to God. And I was also saving at least 10% at the same time. And then Kathy and I got married. And we continued doing this. And we refused to get into any debt. And we kept on saving our 10% minimum every year. And we were giving around 20% for those first few years of our marriage. Well, then I left the Navy. And I went back to school for 2 years to get an MBA. I went back to a school called Wharton in the University of Pennsylvania. And Wharton is a really expensive school, and I had no scholarship, so I was paying full price. And we had no income because at the same time we had our first child and Kathy couldn't work. So 2 years, almost no income at an expensive school. And the thing is, I hated debt. And I knew that I could just go out and get student loans to pay for the whole thing, and then I'd be in a whole bunch of debt. And I didn't want to do that. And so, you know, I prayed about this, and I said, you know, God, I really don't want to be in debt. And I feel like we've been pretty generous to you. And so I'm trusting that you're going to provide a way. And he did. Before we left San Diego to move to Philadelphia for school, we sold our house for a big profit. And then I got an inheritance from a relative that I didn't even know. And between the house and the inheritance, it was enough to pay for the 2 years of college without any student loans. What a coincidence, right? You know, just happened to come along at the right time from somebody I didn't even know existed. Now, I have to admit that while we were in those 2 years, though, and I had almost no income, and things were really tight because Kathy wasn't working, so I confess, we reduced our tithe to 10%. Okay? There is no way on earth I would ever lower it below 10% because I didn't want to lift God's blessing off our finances. But I thought God would understand, since our income went down, that, you know, he'd be okay with 10% for a while. Well, I finished my MBA. I got hired by General Electric. And I started raising our giving again to about 15% because, you know, we were getting blessed. Now, I have to say, Kathy and I were really thrifty. We bought used cars and we paid cash. And we had a credit card. We had several credit cards, but we always paid them off every month. Never paid finance charges. That was like, of the devil. And it was years before we bought any new furniture. Because our first priority was giving to God, and our second priority was saving at least 10% every month, and we actually saved a lot more than that because we put every extra dime we could into paying off our house. But then one day, about 6 years after I finished my MBA, I quit my corporate job and became the pastor of this church. And the church was too small at that time to pay me, and so I went on unemployment for 6 months. And after 6 months, the church did give me a salary, but it was only about half what I'd been making before. It was about $30,000, I believe. And I had no benefits. Well, our youngest child was up to 5 years old and in school by then, so Kathy was able to go back to work as a receptionist, and we got some health benefits from her. But even with our combined salaries at that time, it was still way less than I'd been making previously in my corporate job. But you know what? Because we had zero debt, we had no car payments, our house was about half paid off by then, we were fine. Even at the lower salary, it was fine. We didn't skip a beat. Now, I confess again, after the pay cut, we did lower our tithe back down to 10% for a period of time. But then, I got another completely unexpected inheritance. Okay? Now, you know, this is God just blessing you, because this one came basically as an annuity. So for 15 years in a row, I got over $5,000 every year from this inheritance. Now, again, you might say that's a coincidence. I say that was God looking at us and saying, you know what? You took a big pay cut in order to become a pastor, you know, and you've been really generous to me. I think I'm going to be extra generous to you. And on top of that, even though Kathy really hadn't wanted to go back to work because she was unsure about her working skills at that point, she happened to land in a job that she loved. And then she just started getting pay raise after pay raise after. In fact, she got two pay raises in the first month. Have you ever heard of somebody doing that? I mean, that's like crazy. And so God was blessing her income too, and we just kept giving first and then saving some more by paying down our house. And then our kids got to college age. And they all wanted to go to private Christian colleges, which, by the way, are really expensive. Now, Kathy and I hate debt. And I already told you that about four times, I think. And we didn't want our kids to be saddled with a whole bunch of debt in the form of student loans as they're starting their adult life. And so we said, you know what? We feel so strongly about this. We're just going to pay for their whole Christian college. They don't have to take out any student loans. Now, I would not expect others here to make that same decision necessarily, but that's just what we wanted to do. And we had saved so much over 20 years that we could do it. We paid about $250,000 in college bills over a period of several years. Now, if you ask me, how in the world could you afford to save up $250,000 on your modest pastor's salary plus Kathy's office admin salary? Well, you know, it seems crazy. But let's take one example. My car right now is 11 years old. Kathy's is 14 years old. We bought them both used in good condition. So we've not had car payments for close to 30 years. But say you just, instead of doing that, you got a $700 a month car payment and bought a new car. And $700 a month for 20 years is $168,000. So if instead of getting that new car, $700 a month, you just did what we did, bought the used cars, paid cash, and put that $168,000 in the bank, well, that's two kids right there of private Christian colleges with no loans. Now, those college bills wiped out our savings, as I knew they would, but that's okay because we'd already paid off our house by that time and we had no debt, and so we could afford to wipe out our savings and give our kids a debt-free start in life. Well, the last kid finished college, and this is about the year 2010, and I'm thinking, you know what? I've wiped out my savings with college bills, and the church has no retirement plan except for the 403B that I've been contributing to, so I probably need something more for retirement. Now, by the way, I haven't gotten a pay raise from this church in over 10 years, and I don't want one. If I was offered one today, I would turn it down. In fact, I voluntarily took about a 20% pay cut several years ago when our church was having financial problems. Okay, but how many of you know that God has lots of ways that He can bless you financially? Right? And so in 2010, I believe God led me to look at buying some rental properties. That was right at the beginning of the real estate crash, and there were hundreds of foreclosures coming on the market, and I didn't have any savings, but my house was completely paid off. And so I got a home equity loan, and I started buying foreclosed houses. And the average price I paid was about $15,000 maybe, so these were not beautiful houses. But I put some money into fixing them up and started renting them. And then every dime of rent that I got was paying down the home equity loans. And, of course, then I got to raise my tithe percentage again because God is blessing us even more. And so now Kathy and I own 9 houses. And they're almost all completely paid for, although I'm still working on the last one. And I just looked at our tax return for the last year, and Kathy and I gave about 22% of our total income to charity. Now, again, please, I am not trying to brag about this, except bragging about God, because I'm trying to show that generosity works. It does bring a blessing. When you give first and then save and then live on the rest, God blesses your finances so much that you are way ahead of people who give a lot less. And I wouldn't teach you to do any of this if I hadn't seen the blessings in my own life. Kathy and I would never want to live any other way because we have seen it work. We've experienced God's blessings over and over and over again. And so I just want to encourage you to give God a chance. At least try to live that way. Give God an opportunity to respond. Because you're going to give away money for the rest of your life. Why not find a way to live a generous life? And if it sounds crazy, I know it sounds crazy, but it's the new crazy. It's crazy for God. And so you have to choose which crazy you're going to do. Are you going to get on that crazy cycle and just go round and round and round? Or are you going to live the new crazy? And I'm telling you, crazy for God is so much better. It's so much better. I'd like the worship band to come up. We're going to close now, but let's end with the verses that we started out with from Proverbs. Proverbs 22:9, generous people will be blessed. And Proverbs 11:25, a generous person will prosper. Let's stand for prayer. God, you have blessed all of us so much. You've allowed us to live in the richest country in the world. You've given us so many opportunities and so many resources. And the greatest resource of all, God, is your word, which shows us how to live in a way that will bring your blessings onto our lives. So thank you, God, for your promises about generosity. And thank you for the huge blessings that will bring into our lives. And I ask right now that you'll show each one of us here our next step. God, what do you want us to do starting today to become generous people? Would you help us to make a plan that puts you as first priority, God? And then would you help us to work the plan? And God, as we obey you in this area, would you help us to live lives of peace and happiness instead of worrying about money? Instead of trusting in riches, we want to put our trust in you who richly provides. We pray this in Jesus' name.